to the Kate Turkington Show. My word, have we got a story for you today. I'm going to read this because I don't want to leave anything out. From Sarah, who is all the way off there in Montana. Lord knows what the time is in Montana. It's mid-afternoon here in Johannesburg. We're crossing to Montana to talk to Sarah Dusek. Now, why are we talking to her? Let me tell you. From an AIDS worker in Zimbabwe, just consider this, from an AIDS worker in Zimbabwe to becoming recognized internationally as one of the Meaningful Business Top 100 leaders. And what does that do? It celebrates outstanding business leaders helping to achieve UN goals, global goals. We'll come to the global goals in a while. But not only has Sarah committed herself to sustainable travel, and I know it's regenerative, not just sustainable, we'll come to that too, and social impact tourism, she's also become a champion, an absolute champion for female entrepreneurs. We're here in Africa. In the last few years, her company, which is called Enigma Ventures, has sponsored and nurtured, think about this, this is a huge number, has sponsored and nurtured over 10,000 women entrepreneurs, nurtured them, showed them how to build businesses. And now, would you believe it, she's building a business in the middle of Limpopo. But we'll come to that too. Sorry, Sarah, it's a very long introduction, but I wanted people to know all about you. Now, the journey from Zimbabwe to becoming a top global, not influencer, I hate that word, top global voice in climate change, in sustainable regenerative tourism. How did it all begin?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Kate. It's an absolute delight to be here with you and always lovely spending time with you. So thank you for having me. It all began quite a long time ago. I first fell in love with the African continent when I was 21 years old, and I came to work in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe was my hook. I fell in love with Africa because of Zimbabwe. And I came to work for a nonprofit organization doing AIDS education and community health work. And I came for 6 months and decided after a few months that I wanted to spend the rest of my life on the continent. I loved it so much. So Africa has influenced and transformed my life in so many ways over the years.
And then how from Zimbabwe did your career, your whole journey progress? Because I know you and your husband, Jacob, you built this amazing company in America called Under Canvas. Just tell us about that. Talk us through that.
Yeah. When I started my career in the nonprofit world, I never imagined I would go into business. And I ended up working for aid organizations for about 8 years, first in Africa and then later in the Far East. I ended up having to leave Zimbabwe during the early years of the land reform in 2000, which was a very traumatic time. I mean, Zimbabwe still is in a very difficult situation. But I had this view in my head that the way you save the world, the way you make the world better, is that you work for a nonprofit organization. So that's what I did for a very long time. So my first era of life. And after 8 years of working for nonprofit organizations, I was really demoralized and frustrated by the fact that we hadn't solved anything. Like, we hadn't made any big advances. The world didn't feel to me like anything had dramatically shifted and changed. And yes, individual people's lives touched and impacted, but I hadn't felt like we'd got to the root of anything. And I met my husband in my last calling in Taiwan. We met in Taiwan 20 odd years ago. And one of the things I realized was that maybe I was sitting in the wrong vehicle, in that I realized the nonprofit vehicle has a very particular shape and style and form and isn't necessarily designed to solve problems. But what I realized, Kate, was that the business vehicle is very much designed to solve a specific problem. That's what a business does, really. It solves one problem or many problems and creates a solution to those problems. And if it's successful, it'll be sustainable because it makes money and, you know, it's circular. And so I realized, I sort of pondered this question, was, could business be used as a vehicle for good? And at this point in time, I'm thinking business is the dark side. It's everything that's wrong with the world. It's capitalism is evil. But I had this kind of arresting thought that actually business could solve some of our big world problems. It could really create solutions that were meaningful and impactful and sustainable, and that we could use business as a vehicle for good. So that was the beginning of my business journey, which ultimately ended up in us building a very, very big, very large business.
And this under canvas, it was, you had the idea, and it seems to me almost impossible that people haven't thought of it before. You and Jake had the thought of opening up like eco-lodges, but not the cosmetic kind, proper little, almost glamping little lodges where round the USA National Park. It seems impossible to me that nobody thought of doing this around Yellowstone or Grand Canyon or anywhere, and yet you thought of it.
Yeah, that's right. We came up with the idea for reimagining the African safari experience. I fell in love with it when I was in Zim. And when I met my husband, who was from Montana, and we moved back to the States and moved to Montana, I realized that there was a lot of similarities between the wild, big open spaces of the African bush and the wild, big open spaces of the American Rockies. And I realized, oh, there's lots of wildlife here and there was lots of wildlife there. I wonder if we couldn't reimagine the African safari experience and create sustainable hotels. Now, this was the beginning of the glamping industry. It didn't exist, as you mentioned. Sustainable hotels weren't a thing. B corporations weren't a thing. This idea of businesses being impactful wasn't a thing, which I know it feels so hard to imagine now that, you know, all these things that we kind of are everyday things now were not in reality. But that was the idea. Could we create access to the outdoors? Could we create opportunities for people to experience the wonders of nature and develop a hotel using a minimal footprint, minimal water, or be off-grid, like many safari destinations actually are, and recreate them in the American West outside of our national parks? And it was an extraordinary thing because it was like the demand and the excitement over the experience just was almost sort of instant. And it enabled us to build a really extraordinary company called Under Canvas that we went on to grow and scale. I spent a decade building that company, and we scaled and grew it across the US, and it's still growing and scaling today.
And then where did, I mentioned earlier Enigma Ventures, this empowering of, and we read so much about empowering and doing stuff in it. Sometimes I'm a terrible cynic, not in your case. It seems so cosmetic is the only word I can say. You have, in how many years, very few years, actually empowered, changed the lives of 10,000 women. Won't you tell us one of the stories? How did it work? What did you do?
Yeah. Well, if I take a step back for a second and how that came about, I realized as I was scaling and growing my own company, that it was actually really difficult for women founders to raise capital. And actually the venture capital world, which is the world that invests in early stage businesses, was pretty biased against women. And I found it very difficult to raise money for my own company for a variety of reasons. And I found the world of venture capital to be very sharky, to be very unhelpful and unsupportive and unchampioning of women. And I had one particular incident while I was raising capital at one point in our journey that made me say to myself, if we ever build this company into a company that has any significant value whatsoever, I'm going to start a fund to invest in women, and I'm going to mobilize other women to grow and build big businesses. Because the other thing I realized was that so many women don't build big businesses. Over 50% of entrepreneurs are women. We live in a world where women are very entrepreneurial. They're building businesses, but often what happens is they're building very small businesses. They're building lifestyle businesses. Only 2% of women ever build a business that does more than $1 million in revenue a year. So that means 98% of all female entrepreneurs don't build a business bigger than doing $1 million of revenue a year. And I just thought, if we want to change the world, if we want to change what our world looks like, the businesses that we build, the solutions that that exist, more women have to be at the table. More women have to be solving the problems that they can see. And to do that, you need money. So that was sort of the light bulb moment for me that said, if we ever sell our business and if we ever have any capital from that, we'll invest in other women to go on the same journey that I had been on. And so we sold our business at the very end of 2018 for an enormous amount of money. And the first thing we did was move back to Africa. We moved the following year and set up the fund that we had imagined a few years prior, and got to work investing, supporting, equipping. And I, like you, Kate, get very, very frustrated that there are a million accelerator and mentorship programs for women and there's still no money. And I was like, women don't need more lectures. Women need capital and mentorship to help them think about the building blocks to grow and scale and build big businesses. So that was the work that we got to do when we first arrived in Africa back in 2019. We came back, it was almost 20 years to the day when I came back to South Africa, so back to the continent. So it was a big full circle moment for me, and this time with a husband and two children in tow. So a really amazing moment for me.
And just give me an idea. Maybe tell me a story. I mean, your own story is so, it's so inspirational. Tell us one of the stories of one of these women that you mentored and helped with capital and whatever.
There are so many women. One of my favourites is an entrepreneur in Eswatini, actually, the teeny tiny little country in Eswatini. And she has an extraordinary chili sauce brand called Black Mamba. And she has now gone on to do deals with Burger King in South Africa. She distributes all over the world. And her crop, her chilies, are grown by local women in Eswatini through a cooperative. They're small-scale farmers. She buys their products. She turns them into a branded product, and she ships it all over the world. And that business is just the epitome of starting small but thinking big, and creating a really amazing brand and taking it to the global stage.
That, just for people who maybe don't know the change of names, Eswatini used to be known as Swaziland, Quite a few years ago now, but you know, many of you know where it is, that little country that sits next to South Africa. Beautiful little country. Now, I want to get on to the Soapensberg. You have gone, and again, I wrote it down because the term's not all that familiar to me. I know sustainable travel because it's like a catchword. But you're, before we talk about the Soapensberg in particular, explain to us the difference between sustainable travel and what you're working on, which is called regenerative travel.
Yeah, thank you for the distinction, Kate, because one of the things that happened to me while I've spent so many years working with African entrepreneurs over the last 7 years has been realizing that the businesses I was interested in championing and supporting were businesses that were making a difference in the world. They were actively trying to create an impact and move the needle forward. And it dawned on me the difference between being sustainable. We talk a lot these days about having a sustainable business. And really, being sustainable means doing no harm. Effectively, like this business, it doesn't make an impact on the planet. We use sustainable resources. You know, we are trying to exist without causing harm. And it dawned on me that that actually isn't enough. It's not enough for us to just think about doing no harm and creating as minimal impact on the planet or in our communities as possible. It actually, if we're going to move the world forward, we actually need to be regenerative. And by that, I mean driving forward movement, creating impact, be that environmentally, be that socially, or in a community. So we are now doing work, and I'm thinking about building businesses that are impactful to the planet and impactful to communities in moving us forward, and not just not doing harm, but actually physically doing good.
Give us an example, Sarah, because it sounds wonderful, but how do you build a regenerative building, a big business?
With everything, you start small and think big. But for us in the Soapensberg, you alluded to it, Kate, we're now building a new business called Few and Far. And this is a new travel company. And my first travel company that I built in the States, we were thinking sustainably. We were thinking about doing no harm, using minimal footprints, minimal water usage, minimal power, etc. And now I'm thinking, okay, that's the floor. That's where we start. And how do we do more than that? So in the Soapensberg, now we're looking at regenerating about 100,000 hectares of land across the Soapensberg mountain.
That's about the size of Singapore.
That's the size of Singapore. It's a fairly large area. Rewilding, restoring grasslands, removing invasive species, and developing a carbon project. So to sequester more carbon from our atmosphere than we emit. So the idea
was
this.
Hang on, explain. I'm totally non-scientific. So what you want to do is you want to give out more carbon or take more carbon in. Explain it to me in 101.
Yeah, that's right. So everything we do emits carbon, right? And that we have a carbon excess sitting in our atmosphere. It's what causes global warming. And the idea is we need to extract more carbon from the atmosphere than we send up. And nature, miraculously as it sounds, nature is the best resource for sequestering carbon and capturing it in the soil. And so if we look after our land, if we manage our land with the focus on how do we capture the most carbon through nature, we actually can do a really, really good job.
And how do you do that? How do you capture more carbon through nature?
Yeah. Our project will be focused on doing two things, restoring grasslands So soil is the most powerful thing we've really, really got, really, because that's where we capture all the carbon. So we either do that through trees or grasses or plants, shrubs. Speck boom can do it, for example, and that's a succulent. But we restore ecosystems. So that's what we're trying to do in the Sopensberg. There's about 60,000 hectares of the 100,000 hectares in the Sopensberg that are considered to be highly degraded, which means they're not in their natural pristine state.
Why? So because of farming and land use.
Because of man affecting the land one way or another through history. Could have been through farming, could have been through mining, could have just been through disturbing the ground. And when man disturbs the ground through one way or another, often the soil loses its ability to capture carbon. So if we can restore the soil by removing invasive species, if we can restore grasslands, if we can nurture the soil, if we can replant trees, we can sequester more carbon from our atmosphere and restore habitat and bring wildlife back into natural habitat that keeps ecosystems alive and healthy. So that's how we're thinking about Few and Far now, that not just being a travel company and building extraordinary places to stay, but also doing climate work and managing landscapes and protecting ecosystems.
Now, how on earth did you decide on far, far, far Limpopo? So Sopensberg is a mountain range called the Forgotten Mountains in local parlance. How and why did you come upon this beautiful, beautiful place, wilderness? I'm lucky enough to have visited there. Absolute wilderness. How did you come upon it?
Yeah, it's a very surprising place because it's very unexpected and very unknown. And a crazy thing happened in that we were living in Cape. We'd moved to Cape Town in 2019. And then, of course, in 2020, COVID rolled around. Now, Kate, I married a man from Montana. And men from Montana do not like living in cities. And we were in Cape Town. And because we were doing work with entrepreneurs, we were expecting to travel all over the continent and spend time here, there, and everywhere. And we were using Cape Town as our hub. But of course, when COVID rolled around, we're now stuck in the city, and we're stuck in our four walls. And we were not even allowed to leave our district, our province. And Jake said to me, "Could we please find a little bit of bush that we could escape to out of the city that, you know, we can go to. It's isolated, you know, we'll not be around other people, and we'll just find a little spot for ourselves." And I said, "That sounds like a great idea. That sounds fantastic." Thinking like a normal person, we might just find a holiday house, a little batch that you could escape to, like, you know. No. He starts searching, and he looks across the Western Cape, and, you know, we're thinking, you know, 3 or 4 hours, you know, weekend getaway kind of place. He doesn't find anything. He starts looking further away. We get out to the Karoo. He's still not finding anything. And he starts getting further and further, and then realizing, of course, that all of the bush in the real sort of what we think of as real African bush in South Africa is on the eastern side of the country. So he's now looking farther and farther and farther away and looking at all sorts of different properties until he finds one that is in the farthest corner away from Cape Town as that you can find. So the northeast corner, right near the Zimbabwean border up in northern Limpopo, and discovers what we both felt like was like the Garden of Eden, like this unexplored mountain range. It was incredibly beautiful, full of wildlife, and nobody there, like hardly anybody there, and hardly any knowing about it. And we fell in love with it immediately when we saw it. And at this point, I'm still thinking we'll just have a little. There was an old hunting rondavel. I was just thinking, well, this is our little escape in the bush. But of course, we had stumbled onto a mountain range that was 100,000 hectares in size. And whilst we didn't buy 100,000 hectares, we realised that the impetus to put the whole Sopansberg into protection, and that all so many neighbours were talking about this sort of being a very critical piece of habitat. It's got more biodiversity. The density of the biodiversity in the Sopansberg is even higher than in the Amazon.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, we were starting to learn how critical this place was and how seriously under threat from coal mining, from agriculture, from hunting, and realizing there was a real impetus and a groundswell to try and protect this larger area and create a larger nature reserve and put a new sort of area in South Africa.
And you've got mountains and valleys, and there's such a, as you say, such diversity.
It's very diverse. Yeah, it is. It's a very, for a wilderness lodge, it's very unusual because it's so mountainous. And used to, obviously, we're all used to going to safari lodges. Many of us are privileged enough to go to safari lodges that are on large plains, and you've got kind of savanna kind of landscape. This is mountainous, so it's a really exciting landscape from that perspective.
And you built these cabins, isn't the right word, I don't know what the word is, but you built these structures, these suites, not the best word either, that cling to the side of the mountain, and they're made of canvas and wood, and you've got the mountains rolling out there in front of you. And what you're going to do, and this really boggles the mind, you're in the process of building an aerial cableway along the mountain. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, one of the things we realized was it's quite hard to put a new destination on the map. And so my husband, because he has one of these inventor crazy thinking minds, he's our crazy inventor. He could imagine accessing the mountain and being able to view wildlife and get to different places on the mountain via an aerial cableway, and being able to sort of create the world's first aerial safari, if you like. And he loved the idea of it being silent. So he's designed a solar-powered aerial cableway, of which there is nothing like it in the world. It'll be the first of its kind, and will hopefully create extraordinary access and a way of being in the wilderness that will be completely new and unique, and create a very special symbiotic relationship with the mountain that allows us to see and do things without creating a footprint.
So it's going to be solar powered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how ultimately, I read it's going to be very, very long. Ultimately,
yes. I think we'll build it in little stages. The first phase will just be a kilometer while we test it and put it through its paces. And then maybe another 8 kilometres, and then some more kilometres after that. But I think the whole route we've built out is about 40 kilometres. So it might take us a few years to do that, but that's the big vision.
But I mean, just the logistics of this, of getting stuff up that mountain, just the building, they trying to create a road, trying to build a cableway. I mean, how are you going to do this? Are you going to use... you're going to need mountain ponies or whatever. Well, yeah. I mean, the logistics seem insurmountable.
Yeah, it was quite a feat even building the little lodge that we have built. So we've got six, a very small lodge at the moment in the middle of our valley. So you climb up and over one mountain and then you're in a valley, and then there's another mountain on the sort of facing the suites. And every piece, every material, every piece of equipment was brought up and over the mountain. So it was quite an enormous feat to even build where we built. And to bring the cable car over and across will also be quite the feat.
And Sarah, what's been the reaction of the local farmers, the local communities? I mean, they must have been, well, I imagine they're delighted, but there must have also been enormous scepticism when you started out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people are always skeptical of new things and new ideas, right? But one of the things that we have discovered, and particularly from our local community and the local vendor people, it's a vendor community up in where we are, and we had realized that there were folks all over the country, vendor folks all over the country, working in other five-star lodges, but that there was nothing in this region. So the excitement of having sort of a world-class lodge right there at their home, slap bang in the middle of the Sopansberg, was super exciting for so many people.
Yes, indeed. And now I'm coming back to the first expression, the UN Global Goals, that you're now recognised as a leading voice. Okay, briefly, and again for the layperson 101, what are the UN Global Goals?
Yeah, I can't remember what year it was now, but the UN set out 17 sort of categories, if you like, of areas in which they considered the need to move the world forward. They range from things like life on land, life in the ocean, gender equality, clean air. They span a spectrum. They're not all environmental, and they're not all social either. There's sort of the whole sort of gambit of ideals for these are the areas in which we need to improve life on planet Earth. And they're extensive and thorough. And they create a framework for us to say which of these goals are we aligning with? Because obviously you can't align with 17. No. But which 2 or 3, 4, 5, or 1? Our fund through sort of Enigma Ventures, for example, we focused on one. We focused on, well, and jobs too. So we focused on gender equality, and we focused on creating access to jobs, and those were sort of our two focus points. Now for few and far, we have about six UN goals that we're sort of really focusing and championing on, and that are sort of the core tenet of how we're building a business. So they're really like the heart and soul of thinking about driving progress forward.
You've got a new book coming out a bit later this year. I think it is. You can pre-order.
It's already out. It's out and about.
Is it out? Oh, yes. Well, it's called Thinking Bigger, a pitch deck formula for women who want to change the world. I love it. And is that a kind of manual of how to?
Yeah, it's my own story. It's the story of growing and scaling and building under canvas, but told in a way that hopefully each chapter creates a bit of a map and a roadmap for other women to think about growing and scaling their own business. So I took the format of the pitch deck. The pitch deck is something that entrepreneurs use to pitch investors when they're trying to pitch for capital, and we unpacked the things on each page, thinking through how you think about scale, how you think about practically building a bigger business, what are the building blocks of that, and how do you position yourself in a way to be attractive to potential investors that might be interested in supporting and backing your business. So the book weaves my own journey through the learnings and challenges and difficulties of doing, actually physically doing it. Because that's the other thing I realized was, like, I actually had very few role models. I had very few people telling me or showing me, this is how you do this. This is practically how you break this down and how to think about scale or building a big business. And so the book is really designed to do that, and to create a practical landscape, a mindset landscape. Because I said at the beginning, you know, often women are just not thinking big enough. We're often thinking too small. We're thinking about what we can manage and what we can imagine. And sometimes we need a little bit of help to take that lid off. So the book's designed to do that, and share my own journey of practically what that looked like in a very real way.
You, Sarah, because you have this kind of, I'm not into auras, but you've got this kind of aura of serenity and quiet confidence, and it can't all have been easy.
Oh, no, none of it was easy, Kate. None of it's easy. And one of the hard things, actually, about becoming an entrepreneur again, if you like, starting from the beginning again, and of deciding, I love supporting other women. I love being an investor. But I realized I also really love being an entrepreneur. I love the excitement and the challenge of creating new things and making things happen and driving a vision forward. I love it. But one of the hard things about starting over again and building a new business is going back to the beginning of the journey. And psychologically, after you've spent over a decade building a business and getting it to its pinnacle, the idea of going back to the bottom of the mountain, quite literally, is daunting. And I have wrestled over the last year, grappling with a lot of my own mindsets that get in the way of doing the work of climbing mountains, like literally climbing mountains, but physically, you know, building businesses is, I often talk about it as it's like climbing a mountain or pushing a rock up a hill. And at any moment in time, you feel like the rock might come down and squash you.
syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the biggest challenges for entrepreneurs in particular, whatever our field is wrestling with the thing in between our own ears, and navigating our own stories that we tell ourselves, and finding ways through to overcome those things. But I think for me, one of the things that helps me is being really clear about my why, and yes, why I want to do anything, why I would work hard at, you know, trying to make anything happen. And there's two things that drive that for me now. And one is the this is what I care about, this is what I'm passionate about. And the other, which might sound strange, but I've come to realize it's so important. The other is, this is what I love. And this is what brings me joy. And this is what brings me delight. And I think life is hard and life is challenging. But if you find things that you care about, find things that you are passionate about, that you are excited to work on every single day, even really, really long hours when it's hard to push the rock up the hill, that is half the battle with doing work that feels meaningful and life-giving to you personally.
Oh, that's and doing what you're good at as well.
And often they collide, right? When you're passionate about something, you kind of find the sort of the center point of my gifts and my talents all align in one place, and I can use those towards something that I love and I care about and excites me every day.
And just to a final question. This is not when you're building or you're following your dream and fulfilling it. Do you have a favorite destination?
Oh, absolutely.
What is it?
It's South Africa. It's Africa. Being in the African bush for me is the most magical thing. If you're asking me to choose where I want to go on holiday, I'm choosing the African bush time and time and time again. So I love nature. I don't like roughing it in nature. I'm going to say that out loud. I love the experience of being able to explore extraordinary wild places and sleep in a very comfortable bed with nice sheets and have a hot shower and a flushing toilet. That's my favorite.
I'm with you there.
So soft adventure in nature, exploring the African bush, appreciating birds and plants and wildlife and stunning vistas and amazing sunsets with a wonderful G&T in the hand. I don't know that it gets any better than that.
Sarah, am I allowed to say what you sold your on the canvas business for?
Yeah, of course you can.
Sarah Durkin, my guest, you've heard her story from AIDS worker to a global voice in, not sustainable, regenerative tourism. She sold her on the canvas business for $100 million. There's inspiration for you. Sarah, it's been so lovely talking to you, and I think you're few and far lodge in Limpopo. Look it up, Google it, Few and Far Luvondo, Luvhondo. Just look it up. I think it will become iconic. And the idea of an aerial safari, as you said, it's unique. I think you're on your way. You're on the way to the next 100 million. Even if you don't, it doesn't matter, because you're changing the world. You're enjoying yourself. You're good, doing good, and you're doing much more than do no harm. You are regenerating. You're giving birth again to something so special. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you.